भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। एवं सृष्टानि भूतानि प्रविष्टः पञ्चधातुभिः एकधा दशाधात्मानं विभजन् जुषते गुणान्। एवं सृष्टानि भूतानि प्रविष्ट पञ्चधातुभिः एकदा दशाधात्मानं विभजन् जुषते गुणान्। एवं सृष्टानि भूतानि प्रविष्टः पञ्चधातुभिः एकदा दशाधात्मानं विभजन् जुषते गुणान्। एवं सृष्टानि भूतानि प्रविष्टा पञ्चधातुभिः एकदा दशात्मानं विभजन् जुषते गुणान्। एवं सृष्टानि भूतानि प्रविष्टा पञ्चधातुभिः एकदा दशाधात्मानं विभजान् जुषते गुणान्। लेडीज, एवं सृष्टानि भूतानि प्रविष्टा पञ्च धातुभिः एकदा दशधात्मानं विभजन् जुषते गुणान्। सृष्टानि भूतानि प्रविष्टा चञ्च धातुभिः एकदा दशाधात्मानं विभजन् जुषते गुण। एवं इन द मैनर जस्ट डिस्क्राइब्ड सृष्टानि क्रिएटेड भूतानि द लिविंग बीइंग्स प्रविष्टः हैविंग एंटर्ड पंचधातुभिः क्रिएटेड बाय द फाइव gross elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether, ekadha, one-fold, as the overseer of the mind, dashadha, tenfold, as the overseer of the five senses of perception and five organs of action, atmanam, himself, vibhajan, dividing, jushate, he engages, he causes the individual soul to engage, gunan, with the material body, with the material modes. Translation, the super soul enters the material bodies of the created beings, activates the mind and senses, and thus causes the conditioned souls to approach the three modes of material nature for sense gratification. Purport. The following is a summary of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary on this verse. The one super soul enters the gross material elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether, and uses the activated material mind to subtly divide the sensory activities of the conditioned souls among the five knowledge-acquiring senses, namely eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin, and by a further gross division, the five working senses, the hands, legs, feet, genitals and anus. Because liberated souls have a strong tendency to serve the Lord, they are not attracted by the dualities of material good and evil. They derive their pleasure through devotion and love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who eternally enjoys His own transcendental pastimes beyond the material manifestation. When the conditioned souls forget their loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they develop illicit desires. Therefore, unable to serve the form, taste, fragrance and other aspects of the Lord of Lord Vishnu, these souls become bound to the bitter fruits of fruitive activities. But if their love of Godhead is somehow or other awakened, the conditioned soul can dovetail all his sensory activities in the service of the Lord's transcendental pastimes. Actually, all materialistic activities are most undesirable. But the conditioned soul, under the influence of illusion, sees apparent distinctions between good and bad, pleasing and displeasing, and so on. The Lord, the super soul, having entered the collective and individual consciousness of the living entities, knows the heart of everyone. Therefore, when a sincere soul aspires for spiritual perfection, the Lord frees him from material bondage and arouses his propensity to serve the Lord of Vaikuntha. Love of Godhead flourishes in the variegated flavors of transcendental enjoyment. In ignorance, however, the conditioned soul considers himself the proper object of service and thus misunderstands the entire existential situation. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Pandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11,
chapter 3, text number 4, entitled the liberation from the illusory energy. The background is known to us. It's about a very profound, very philosophical, and a very conclusive dialogue between great personalities like Maharaj Nimi, who is the very worthy descendant of a great dynasty of Rajarshis. And he is with a very grateful and a very inquisitive heart, asking the great souls, nine of them, the Navayogendras, something very profound and relevant. Importance is evidenced by the fact that the conversation has appeared in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. When anything qualifies to enter into the documentation of Bhagavatam, it is obviously something which is of not just local, regional, national, international, but universal importance. To the extent that the Lord, Sri Vyasadev, thinks that it is important to for devotees, spiritual aspirants, to read this historical account forever. And therefore 11th canto is very, very important for us, because within that is this dialogue between Navayogendras and Maharaj Nimi. Some of our most important slokas come from there, especially when we recite the evidences for Mahaprabhu's birth. We enjoy, we relish quoting the verses of how even millions upon millions of years ago Mahaprabhu's descent has been prophesied. So this is these discussions are very relevant and a very important object of study. In this particular sloka which we are discussing today, it is a dialogue between now Maharaj Nimi and the Navayogendra called as Antariksha. He is now the one who is speaking on behalf of the group of Vaishnavas, and then somebody else will speak, somebody else will speak, like that. Each one gets his chance to serve. Over here, the purport is very concise and nicely explains how from the beginning of the soul's journey into this world, what he does, what he goes through, what he should do, what he should not do, and what is the ultimate goal of life. In just three paragraphs, four paragraphs, the entire cycle has been nicely explained. Of course, it starts originally from the Pradhan. Pradhan. Pradhan means, like you say, Pradhan Mantri. Right? Pradhan means the Prime Minister. Or maybe you can say the primeval minister, like that. It's like a prime minister, the supreme minister. Then you have other ministers also, but they are not very important. The prime minister. So, Pradhan, like the original homogeneous collection of matter in its inactivated state is called as Pradhan. There's nothing beyond that. This is the primeval, if you can call it, a cloud of gas, parallel of the atheistic scientist. We don't ascribe to that theory, but still, that's what it really actually is. It is the original summum bonum of all inanimate life. And it is then that when the Lord glances upon this, His glance is the life-giving transformative agent. It is interesting because in this world, nobody can create life through eyes. Modern science, they can create, you know, they think they can create and test tube and this and that. But, I mean, they have not understood how somebody can give life by looking at something. Right? But this is the Lord's unique feature. Angani yasya sakala endriya vrittimanti. Right? We may require a particular organ of our body to be able to generate life, because it is specifically designated to that particular organ to eat, to work, to see, to speak, to hear, etc. But the Lord, by definition, is an unlimited entity. We are limited entities, therefore we have limited faculties, limited range of knowledge, limited range of perception, limited range of ability to perform. But by definition, when you say the Lord, or God, or Super Soul, or the Supreme, or the Divine, whatever name it may be used, is a person who actually is defined as who has unlimited potencies. Right? So he can create not just one life, or a few lives, or a few million lives. He can create all life. What is the power of a glance of one person to create all life? We need to put into our brain substance to understand that, right? Because, you know, how many living beings are there to be impregnated into this pradhan? This figure will always remain a mystery, right? Some things will always, even in the modern world, will remain unknown, right? How many souls are there? They can't even count how many bacteria are there in the colon. If I give a finite human being and say, here is a human being and here is his large intestine, and just count the number of bacteria there in his colon, and you know, nobody can do that. They can say, well, 10 raised to something, something they will say, you know. But nobody can say. Yeah? Even that remains an unknown figure, even in the realm of direct perception, sensual perception, countable perception, analytical perception. Ascending process, you cannot find out, right? So we take pride in, you know, being able to tell so many things, but you cannot tell number of hair on your body. Nobody has done it. I don't think they've even attempted this. Maybe after you go bald, they can say, now we'll transplant 2,000 hair from this part of your scalp to this part of the scalp. They can count and they can charge you for that, because they have to count, because they have to charge you per hair. If they don't count, they lose the money, right? But how much hair is there on the skin of a human being, or a cow, or an animal, or a doggy, or a hairy dog, or any of this? Who knows, right? Even finite substances cannot be calculated. So we are talking about something which is beyond. So therefore Prabhupada was very sharp and very heavy on this point that we all, of course he was talking more about the scientific world, are all clubbed into one club. They call it as Dr. Frog Club. That everyone, the supreme most PhD, double DSC, research scientist, Nobel laureate, are all called as Dr. Frogs. This is Acharya's version. We may not agree, we may agree, that's up to us. But we enjoy agreeing with Prabhupada, don't we? Because, you know, he's our hero. So what he says is our standard of everything we think and would like to think about life. Right? So he was very clear that when two frogs meet in the well, and if somebody, one frog who's in the well, which is, a well is how much, how big? We have wells in GV, we have wells in our every baudi, in every village. You know, maybe 20 feet across maximum, big wells. So if that frog happens to come out of the well and starts seeing with his frog eyes the Atlantic Ocean, so what is his experience? And then he goes back to his friend frog and said, you know what, I saw the Atlantic. No, he didn't say that, right? He said, I saw a huge body of water. And that frog keeps on speculating. The frog, he's also a PhD, right? He's a doctor. He's not a medical doctor, he's a PhD. So he keeps on speculating, how big is the Atlantic Ocean, right? So we all are like that. But glance of one person called as Mahavishnu is sufficient
to impregnate unlimited life in matter. That is God. If anyone can do that, that is God. Otherwise, Prabhupada used to have give them different adjectives, right? You would reverse the word of God and say something else. So Prabhupada was very heavy about this. Anybody who calls himself God is dog. And he would decry very strongly the false Godman theory. Prabhupada in fact fought about in his life on various fronts. But when you look at Prabhupada's life, especially he was against the chemical evolution theory. He was heavily against that. And he was against men of this world proclaim themselves as God. In Prabhupada's eyes, if these two poisonous theories can be eliminated, the world will become such a better place to live in. All the other things that the world has apart, right? We just destroy atheistic theory of evolution. Therefore, Prabhupada was very happy. When we are reading this, we need to remember that Prabhupada's convictions of his heart stem from these verses which he read. Of course, he was a self-realized soul, yes, but then he was having perfect knowledge about these verses also. So his greatest joy was when he met a person who could stand with this faith in the front of the entire scientific world and said, "Hey guys, you are making a big mistake." And that was Bhaktisvarupa Damodar Maharaj. A young Indian scientist from Manipur. I think he met him in Pennsylvania or somewhere when he was doing his PhD. Prabhupada just loved him so much. And ever since they met for the first time, Prabhupada's special affection for this wonderful soul who took shelter of his lotus feet was very obvious. Because here was a person who Krishna had sent, and Prabhupada was very convinced of this, that who will has a Vaishnava background from his Manipur birth, because Manipur is and was the only Vaishnava state. It was ruled by Vaishnava kings, and therefore he was raised up singing the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. Ganganar and Chakravarti had preached over there. So he was born with the Vaishnava culture. Now he had the addition of the scientific culture, and when you get put to combine, it is, as they say, a lethal combination. Vaishnava culture with scientific culture is a, of course, scientific is not a culture, but still, whatever you call it, scientific indoctrination. When you combine the two, you can really stand in any assembly in front of anyone, even the biggest guys in the world, right, and say, "This is what the truth is," and you can be very confident about it. It is evidence from the fact that, you know, Prabhupada was very choosy about money. We know stories of Prabhupada using charana also very carefully, right? We heard the stories like that, right? But somebody has to be sent by post and something has to go manually. The post will cost how much? It said, I don't remember the numbers, but now I think it said Athanaka stamp. If you are going personally there to place, you can carry it yourself, you will save Athana, right? So Prabhupada was very clear about Athana also, right? There was Acharya. As I was hearing today morning, Prabhupada said, "Is there any businessman in the world who had made 40 rupees into 40 crores of rupees? This is Krishna. He can make 40 rupees into 40 crores. And yet after earning 40 crores, not for himself, but for the movement and for Krishna, he was still sticky about Athana. And yet, he allowed Srivadavadan Maharaj to borrow any amount of money from the BBT to do all his conferences. Everybody else who wanted to spend had to collect first. You cannot spend money on anything like a new project. You make it, Prabhupada says, "Okay, go ahead. But you know, you collect." But here is a person who could ask from BBT, said, "I want X amount of money for a conference of World Nobel Laureates," or it. Right? So anyway, the point is that Prabhupada is very clear that life cannot come from chemicals, from matter. Right? And therefore this is the conviction of every Vaishnava, quite clearly, that it is life comes from life, chemicals come from life, and life does not come from chemicals. These three conclusions are very solidly impregnated in the heart of every practicing devotee. course then, when life comes in, into matter, it activates matter. That's important. Matter in itself, Prabhupada also has made very clear that any machine of this world, there has to be a living touch. Even a remote control, you can shoot a missile from sitting here, but there has to be a person who presses the button or gives the phone call, said, yeah, fire. There has to be a soul, a living person who can activate matter, right? So when the soul enters, the matter gets zoop, 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 it goes in some set of activity, right? And then the soul starts getting its, manifesting its actual nature. What is that nature? Quite as he says over here, his nature is to again gravitate towards sense gratification. Something which he has been doing all life, in every life, in every species, he just gravitates back. That's why he's called as a conditioned soul. He cannot but think of anything else. He's just conditioned to think that I am this body. That is conditioning. Right? He just conditioned to think in every species. What is the power of the Lord's illusion? Forget the Lord's creative potency. What is his power of his illusory potency? It's not even his real potency. It's like byproduct potency. Just to manage this world, something, What is not the nature of his actual potency in the Antaranga Shakti in the Lord? The Bahiranga Shakti is so powerful, and we know the conditioned souls outside who are not within the presence of this knowledge, they don't know anything. But even those of like us who are practicing this knowledge, we are supposed to be Nityam Bhagavat Sevaya, hearing every day for the last few years, and how many verses and how many shlokas and how many stories and how many analytical discussions you had, and you're just going on and on in all our life practically, we've been reading this, and yet it is just so easy to function on the bodily platform. It is just so natural for us to think about, as he says, good and bad. But the weather is not good. Aaj bahut garmi hai na, 42 degrees, are baap re, 42 degrees. Immediately our body starts, you start responding to, aaj thanda hawa hai. And immediately, whether we are Vaishnavas or not, whatever, we immediately start connecting ourselves so nicely with the environment, with prasada chathana, the food, the good taste and the not so good taste of prasadam, the weather and like that. So we just immediately gravitate towards all these things. But here is very nice, it says that the liberated souls, they have a different standard of happiness. I think that's a very beautiful, way to look at life. We can look at life and look at people who have life from this parameter. What are people's standard of happiness? That really defines people. We define people in so many ways. People define themselves maybe from the fabric they wear, right? Some ads will say the complete man just because of the fabric you wear. So then they define themselves from the fabric, right? So that's their sense of identity to themselves, that they are wearing a piece of cloth from a particular mill, and therefore they are what they are. Right? So different people have different standards of happiness. Or if somebody has a BMW, something, right? Oh, he has only nano car. So then standard is based on that. However, all these are all flimsy, superficial. But real analysis, if you want to make an analysis of people, is that what is the standard of their happiness? What is it they really do? Because we are all ultimately pleasure-seeking people. Is it not? We are all pleasure-seeking people. So what we seek pleasure in will definitely define us. And that's a very beautiful way of looking at people. If your sense of pleasure is wine and women, then that defines you. That you are a particular type of person who thinks pleasure is wine and women. And that's what you really stand for. That's what your whole life is all about. Your life revolves and rotates around. Right? The wine and the woman. Right? So we can go on talking like that. we can have gradations of that type, right? Of course, the Vedic observers, they classify people like that. You have, as per this categorization, the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the bhaktas. So this is how Vedic observers classify from this standard, the standard of happiness. Those whose standard of happiness is gross sense sexual activities, they are called as karmis. Then those who are into analysis, knowledge, living rigorous lives of celibacy and strict restraint on senses, right, and deep study into the holy scriptures, right, living very reclusive lives in solitude, jnanis. Those into intense performance of tapasya, yogis. So everyone is looking for pleasure and they are getting pleasure. We may think, oh, what this guy is sitting in a cave? What is this pleasure? Now we may think that this is abnormal. But for him it is very normal to decline the pleasure of this world, all the cars and roads and ads and mobiles of this world, right? And just sit in a cave, a dark, non-ventilated, scorpion-infested cave. For us, even a cockroach-infested house will be a very difficult house to stay. But for a person who is a yogi, even a scorpion-snake-infested cave is just, well, they're like we are friends, you know. You can survive. There are people like that, many people. Of course, now the ratio may have gone down, you know, because the world has changed, the sense of happiness has changed for most people. But there were people, including, you know, our spiritual masters, who have lived in caves for months and months together, because there was a standard of happiness, right? So then, what is, or what should be rather, our standard of happiness? Right? And that would define a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is not defined by his dress. A Vaishnava is not defined by the mantra he chants. A Vaishnava is not defined by the rituals he performs. It's defined by his standard of happiness. What does his soul perceive pleasure in? Right? And therefore the whole, for this particular, to allow those who are on this level of pursuit of life, and there is a whole grantha which gives them that facility to access unlimited pleasure from that realm, the realm of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the standard of happiness of a Vaishnava. Every great Vaishnava of this world has taken pleasure. We sing, nowadays we've been singing for the last few days, Naham, that Manikya, or that verse, rubies, gems, right? And Nilanda. I'm not bad at this verse. You know, that we just sang it 15 minutes back. That, you know, a devotee genuinely and deliberately rejects that this is the pleasure, standard of happiness. Rubies means what? Rubies means wealth. Manikyam, rubies, great houses. This is, so the author is very much, you know, the poet is telling that how a Vaishnava means one whose standard of happiness is not this. Mahaprabhu also is very much conversant with this, you know, thought process. He says, na dhanam, na janam, na sundari. Right? Therefore, the acharyas are called this as the North Pole Star Sloka. North Pole Star. Right? It's a beautiful way of looking at the sloka. If you want to know whether the ship of my life, which I'm navigating through this ocean of birth and death, that my ship of life is moving in the right direction, then as I should do earlier, when the compass was not there, look at the North Pole. Oh, North Pole? Okay, so this is North. This is south, this is east, this is west, right? They would be able to guide their journey to the dark oceans, right? Even when there was nothing to guide them, looking at the North Pole. What they did in the daytime, I don't know. How they managed the daytime, well, what they saw, I had no idea. But this is, at least in the night, they would, when there nothing is there to see, North Pole, right? So whether our life is being steered in the right direction, How much are we losing this propensity to pursue name, fame, prestige, beautiful men and women, right? And the wealth of this world. To the extent our asakti is still with these things, that means we are still not focused on the North Pole completely. In fact, the very nice thing I heard about Jesus Christ. So when Jesus Christ was walking, he told his followers, said, "Look at me. Only look at me and follow me. Do not look behind and do not look to the sides. Look only at me. I am in front of you." I said, behind means the things you have left behind. All of us devotees, whether in Brahmacharya Ashram or Grihastha Ashram, we have left many things behind us. The renounce order, of course, has left many more things than a Grihastha has done. And that's their glory. Right? You have left behind many things. Christ says, don't look behind. Don't look behind. You have given them up? Given them up. Aage bado. Go forward. Right? But you look behind, my mother, my sister, my house, my degree. Right? You look behind, many things you have left behind. Oh, no, what happens to my house? So now, again, your speed is like a de-accelerating force. You are pushing accelerator by chanting Hare Krishna and looking behind also while pressing Hare. So you are actually, you know, not really going forward. You are not really thinking, well, let me just slow down and, because I have left behind many things. It's, don't look at the side also. The side is the thing which the world is offering you. The world is offering you all these so-called higher tastes of life. Look at the pleasure. The pleasure fields of this world, they have so much to offer. And of course, with the modern technology, there is so much, even more than our ancestors to enjoy. Right? Yeah, this and that. Said, look only in the front. Look at only me. Mahajanavina gatha sapantha. Look at only the road which the Mahajans walk on. Right? Therefore, when Mahaprabhu performs his pastimes, as a Vaishnava, he sets these standards of happiness criteria in his own life as a proof that every Vaishnava is supposed to follow these footsteps. Mahaprabhu was at Varahanagar. At Varahanagar, there is a wonderful Vaishnava who was just relishing reciting every day in the morning the Srimad Bhagavatam. As reading Srimad Bhagavatam pretty much loudly, and from a small kutia, the words of Bhagavatam were emanating into the outside air. Mahaprabhu was traveling on Padayatra. He was going through all, anywhere and everywhere, wherever his heart would carry him. Not really going in particular direction. He was just sort of absorbed in his own internal ras. And he was going, of course, Antaranga Shakti is there. So, you know, she's managing, the Leela Shakti is managing where the Lord should go. But he's not constantly saying, I should take left or right. He just goes. He just walks through, right? And he hears the Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, you see what attracts people, right? It's a filmy song. Hey, filmy song. 20 years back, I had seen this movie. Yeah. And Odin Yada Karo, like that, you know. You go into the past and say, yeah. Even now, after so many years, I'm surprised, you know, some Hindi songs just come into your mind. And you start, you know, gungunaving them. I said, what's wrong with me, you know? why am I, you know, taking pleasure in this? But it comes like bubbles, you know, from the ocean. Boom, boom, it comes to the surface of the mind. From some conscious mind to the conscious mind, it just comes like a bubble. Boom. But Mahaprabhu is attracted. And Mahaprabhu is not attracted. He's just mesmerized. He's so attracted. And he's stupefied. He just gets stupefied and just listen with rapt attention. Right? He doesn't want to lose a single microsyllable of this recitation. And he stands there and then his body goes into raptures. He goes into raptures of Ashtasatvik Vikar. And he starts jumping and singing and dancing and rolling and crying. Right? When this story was being narrated, the author is saying, the narrator is saying, this is should be the result of one who hears Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we are feeling sleepy, right, aren't we? Because we are we, and we are not Mahaprabhu Chaitanya, right? But yet, this is the standard of happiness. When a great soul hears, and Srivas Thakur was passing by even Devanand Pandit's ashram. Now, Devanand Pandit is not necessarily a great pure-hearted Vaishnava. We know that from the story that he still doesn't stand for, you know, Shuddha Bhakti. He stands for asceticism, brahmacharya, scholarship, and maybe some extent impersonalism also. But even when he is reciting, for a pure devotee, he's like, you know, he doesn't care where he's coming from. He hears the Srimad Bhagavatam and he just sits down there. Just sits down there and says, this is, I don't want to go wherever I'm going. I just want to sit down there. And again, what happens to Srivas Thakur? Right? Raptures, shaking of body, uncontrolled movements of the body, starts crying, starts creating grunting sounds from his throat, right? And what is perceived by people who are around him, said, yeah, what's wrong with him? Is he alright? So just pick him up and throw him out of the assembly. He said, this guy is a nonsense disturbance. Just let him go out of this place. Hearing this nice katha and this fellow, he said, I don't know what's wrong with him. Out. So this is what happens to great souls. Right? And then he tells this Vaishnava, go on reciting, go on reciting. Recite more. And when somebody appreciates what you are doing, you feel like, oh, there's somebody in the audience who likes what I'm speaking. Everyone is sleeping, but one guy is, you know, looking at attentively hearing. He said, you look at him. I said, yeah, at least he's, I'm connected to him at least. I'm speaking for you, Prabhu. Like that. So there's one person in the audience who's like really so happy. Of course, this Vaishnava was not doing for that. He was doing it for family every day. That was his sadhana bhakti. That was his joy, standard of life, standard of happiness. That every day in the morning, recite Srimad Bhagavatam. The Lord, having seen this regular performance of this beautiful ritual, which did this was love, the Lord wanted to reciprocate. And therefore, Leela Shakti allowed him to come through that road and not some other road. And the Lord is so happy, and he goes and embraces him. And said, your name is from today, Bhagavat Acharya. Bhagavat Acharya. Right? Because you're taking pleasure in reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Even if you don't understand, now see, some of these shlokas are so, you know, this creative energy, third canto, and all the Sankhya stuff which is there. I can't understand. I mean, some of these brilliant scholars here maybe, but I just can't understand. Some of them are so technical, you know. You can't one from the other, another, other, and so many things are happening. You don't know what's happening. But even if you don't understand, the end of the story tells us, still keep on reading. The illiterate Brahman at Sri Rangam. What is his standard of happiness? My standard of happiness is to do that activity which my Guru Maharaj asked me to do. He said, you sit here, my dear Prabhu, sit in front of the Sri Rangam temple. Look at this temple is here. You sit here. Look at the Lord. He's there inside. You can't go in because you're sort of untouchable type of person. You sit here and read. Right? He would read. And he would read there and he would not understand anything. Of course, he was reading Srimad Bhagavad Gita at that time. And yet, when he would read something, the same thing like this, he would start crying. Right? So there is something wonderful as is said in this purport here, that the Lord is there within the heart. Where did it say that, right? We read it today. The Lord is in the heart. And actually our spiritual progress does not depend on our sadhana. Our progress depends on how much we please the Lord through that sadhana. Sadhana in itself and propound proudly with some other motivations can be really a destructive force in a devotee's life. Right? But the sadhana has been performed with only one motivation. I want to somehow please the Lord. And I want to serve the Vaishnavas. When a Vaishnava's standard of happiness is these two sets of motivations, what are they? That I want to serve the Lord through my sadhana bhakti and I want to serve the Lord's devotees by being a humble servant. When these two become the foundational mood, foundational value systems of a practicing Vaishnava, then every act of bhakti draws the Lord more and more towards such a devotee. Even the smallest act of just collecting the juta and putting in front of the Vaishnava, say, please wear this. There are speeches of Prabhupada's disciples. Prabhupada is coming, walking out of the door, and just somebody comes and puts his juta there, his lotus feet to step on. And Prabhupada just touches the person on his head for doing this menial service. And that's the only service he did to Prabhupada all his life, to just give him his pair of slippers to wear when he was stepping out of the temple. And that blessing, that divine touch of a great soul, just like Narasingh Dev touched Prahlad, and a great soul touches you on the head, that seva is nourishing the devotee even today after so many years. Right? Prabhupada allowed me to give him his pair of slippers to wear. Right? So that act of humble service so much pleased the Lord that even after so many years, that is sufficient for him to go on all the battle of life. Right? So every act of a devotee, whether a big act of massive preaching, large scale preaching, or act of just taking the jhuta plate of a Vaishnava and putting it for washing. Right? Any of these acts on any spectrum of external value, right, becomes to the Lord very attractive, because it is done with these two primary motivations. So we as practicing devotees need to reorient our busy lives. Sometimes our lives get so absorbed in so many complexities of life, but again to reorient our consciousness and make this the standard of our happiness. That our happiness is on doing only those things which please the Lord and please His pure devotees. Whether I like it or not, whether I feel like doing it or not, whether I am appreciated for it or not, whether I am encouraged to do it or not, you know, these are all sentiments which may have some value, no doubt, because sort of inner motivation may be there through all these things. But on the higher platform, whether all these things happen or not, if I can just continue doing those things which please the Lord and please the Lord's pure devotees, then my eternal happiness is secure, not in this world, but the eternal world of Vaikuntha. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jaya, Granthasrimad Bhagavatam ki jaya.